Welcome to Lead Time Chats, where you can listen in on unscripted conversations between leaders in tech to help you make remote teamwork a little bit less challenging. I'm Jean, and I'll be your host. Lead Time Chats is brought to you by Range. Range helps remote teams work better together with asynchronous check-ins, integrated team building, fewer and more effective meetings, and easy goal tracking. When you run your team with Range, you'll always know what's going on without having to be in back-to-back meetings. To learn more about Range, you can check it out at range.co. Hi, Andy. Welcome to Lead Time Chats.
Thanks, Jean. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about building an inclusive meeting culture. And I know you were most recently at Strava leading design teams and that your team was hybrid. And I'm curious for you as people, you know, return to, or some people return to the office or, you know, some people are remote, some people are in person. What has that looked like? Like how has like your practices evolved to support, you know, both remote and in-person workers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think the way that Strava has handled the kind of hybrid nature of work going forward has been terrific. We're able to hire people in a broader diversity of places now, and there's really no obligation for them to be around one of the offices. So I think, you know, allowing people to kind of work at in the place and in the kind of time zone that makes sense to them has worked really well. And then it becomes more about how meetings and gatherings are figured out and how that is, you know, kind of planned and thought through. And there's a variety of techniques that we've, you know, put together over time, which is super interesting. But yeah, I think allowing people to either live in a city where an office is, or to be able to come into that office from time to time at their need, as well as having permanent or hoteling desks in that office space, all speaks to this notion of flexibility and being able to kind of throw down different moves when it comes to how we're working.
Mm-hmm. So I know when people say hybrid, they sometimes they mean different things. Maybe we can get a little bit clearer on what Strava has done. So I know some teams are like, oh, these teams go in, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And so in that sort of setup, I feel like in some ways it's a little bit less, I mean, it's flexible for commuting where you don't have to go in every day, but it's a little bit less flexible in that, you know, if you have team meetings, like those are supposed to be the collaboration days. And so the processes are all set up mostly for like in-person collaboration. But it sounds like what you're saying is that it's a bit more flexible. Like there are people who don't live close to an office. It's more of a maybe default distributed model.
Yeah, that's definitely been the experience. And that appears to be the intention. There's no set days that folks have to be in the office or anything like that. And what I was observing was a lot of intentionality around the times when people would get together. And that was kind of decided on like a team basis or a cross-functional basis. So, you know, you'd have a team that's like, hey, we're going to get together in Denver. It's going to be the third week of May, and we're going to do some workshops, and we have it kind of planned out. And so if you can make it, that's great. And if you can't, we're going to have Zoom support for you, and you'll be able to participate fully from remote. But yeah, there's no, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday type structure or anything like that in my experience. And I think it's worked really well to kind of leave things a little bit more intentional and flexible when it comes to that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most common pain points I'm hearing as some people return to an office and some people stay kind of more fully remote is that there's this fear of like remote employees becoming second-class citizens, right? Having less access to, you know, FaceTime with leadership, maybe access to just like the spontaneous conversations that happen in an office. I guess how have you seen that addressed, or has that been an issue that's come up?
Yeah, for sure. I've seen that in a couple places, and I think those are valid risks that persist for a lot of organizations, whether they're, you know, more structured in how they do the hybrid notion, or if they're a lot more flexible. Mitigations for that can look like, you know, these in-person gatherings that are super intentional that get people together, but that still doesn't always guarantee inclusion. Some folks are just simply not going to be able to attend for, you know, a variety of reasons. And, you know, I think one thing that I've employed with my reports is setting aside time with them, remote or in person, that is not about work. And we'll talk about random stuff in our lives, what we're up to. I had a fellow who was remodeling his bathroom, and we would get together and talk about that. We also would do like a monthly meeting where it was, you know, quote unquote, anti-capitalist time, where we would just get together and talk. We'd walk each other through each other's houses or show, you know, someone's backyard and what they're working on in their garden and stuff like that. So that kind of stuff helps to create, you know, first and foremost, like a trusting environment where we get to know each other on the human level. And I feel like that transcends, you know, the technology mediating those encounters. So you can go from that to something in person, or you can do that in person and go to remote, and it kind of works in both places in my experience.
Yeah, we also do something similar, or we're starting a new season internally of what we call Range Cribs, inspired by MTV Cribs. So people will do a tour of their homes or their backyards or their office spaces. It's just pretty fun to see
that
people work.
That's so great. I mean, it's basically we're doing the same thing, and it's, you know, people have questions. What's that poster on the wall, or, you know, where'd you get that piece of furniture? And it's very human and inviting. And like I said, it creates that level of trust that I think is really, really important to however you're working, whatever kind of team you're in. It's really important to have that trust and know people on kind of a human level.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're talking a lot about like inclusion when there's people who are in person and remote, but I do want to note that I think it's, you know, even when everyone is in an office together, it's not always inclusive, right? And a lot of times the problems we're solving for remote or hybrid workspaces are actually addressing some of the issues that have existed, but haven't been like severe enough to intentionally address. And I have an example where like the first startup I worked at, I was pretty clear that I wanted to work like somewhat like normal hours, like go home for dinner. And I remember that a lot of people would stay, they kind of have like a, you know, lived alone apartment. So they would just hang out in the office like all day and then, you know, go to the gym, go meet up with friends and then come back after dinner, and they'd stay till like midnight or something. And a lot of times I'd come in the next morning and, you know, there'd been some product and design conversations the night before and like, oh, actually we're doing this instead. And I felt like, even though we were all in an office environment, like that was not particularly inclusive of like just different lifestyles. And like, yeah, it was just something that came up when you were talking about like the remote and then also just like being intentional.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that kind of goes back to some of the risks. And I think that's a very real risk. If there's a cadre of folks who can get together and they have camaraderie with each other and they are around each other a lot, maybe they go and do activities together, what, you know, no matter what it is, there can be that risk. You know, there was this thing, like I remember like in movies or, you know, past corporate culture where the golf course was that notion. And it's kind of like the evolution of that notion where you have some folks in the company who can get together and talk to each other. And, you know, I think that's a risk, but it's also about the boundaries and the sense of inclusion that those folks have and the transparency around, you know, decisions that might be made in those forums that's important to call out or important for them to be aware of. And you know, also talking about like having intentionality around how a company operationalizes making decisions and having that be kind of an agreed upon thing, totally okay to talk about work outside of work. It's a big part of our life, but also like, you know, hammering out, you know, how do we make decisions here and what are the processes for doing that? And I don't mean anything super dogmatic or, you know, like submitting forms and having a bureaucracy, But an agreed upon way of coming to, you know, an understanding and alignment over decisions is important because that helps reduce this sense of, hey, something's happening over here. I'm not part of it. Is our decisions being made without me? You know, things like that. It kind of helps smooth out that anxiety or feeling of not being included.
Yeah, you don't necessarily want to say like, okay, you can hang out outside of work, and but you can't talk about work, and you can't make any right, it, like
yeah,
or it you don't brainstorm any product ideas. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. But I think you're right. Like having the intentionality of the regular cadence where everyone can be included. You know, the offsites, the in person meetings, but then also right, like for the team to prioritize it. So like if say two people are out for lunch, you know, because they work in the office together and they start riffing on some ideas that they, you know, they're not just going to decide and run with it. They're going to be like, hey, let's bring this in, or like, let's call a meeting with so-and-so and like bring them into the, you know, bring them in the loop so that they can, so that we can like give them the context. Right.
Yeah.
So that's something like, that you kind of just have like mindfulness of in the team.
Yeah. It takes, you know, emotional intelligence to see how that plays out within an organization. And, you know, I think it's just something to be really, you know, be super aware of if you're having those kinds of conversations. I think the other thing too, is maybe for some people, their cognitive style, their flow state is to be outside of the rigid boundaries of the workplace and to be in a social setting or to be exercising together. And that's where they get creative and they get inspired about things. And I think that's important to keep that cognitive style in mind. That's one of many different ways of being creative. And just as long as there's some support when they come back to the office to bring others along, I think that is ultimately, you know, an inclusive way, a round trip way of thinking about, you know, how we improve the workplace or how we come up with cool new ideas for products.
Yeah, definitely. So we've talked about kind of like, we've kind of been circling this topic of meetings. We've talked about like, you know, one-on-ones and having, you know, you got anti-capitalist time and, you know, cribs with your team. I think a lot of that is really good for kind of connecting with like the humanity of, you know, the coworkers you work with. I think for most teams, probably the bulk of the time that they spend with each other, especially on remote teams, is, you know, just kind of standard team meetings, meetings with smaller groups of people. So I guess what are some tactical tips you found to make running those meetings more inclusive, and not just of remote employees, but just in general?
Yeah, I think I'm big on intentionality when it comes to meetings. Now, there's some meetings that just kind of recur and, you know, they can be dubious of nature if they're recurring and you don't have an agenda. I think, you know, having some sort of agenda or some sort of ritual to the cadence of a meeting, the thing that you run through with a group of folks is really important to do. And then, you know, when you get into the actual, you know, if that's like checking in or how's everybody doing, then you can kind of have like a template, you know, agenda for stuff like that. When it comes to generation, when it comes to co-creation or co-working, things like that, my general rule is if you're going to have, you know, five people in the room, try and spend 5 hours preparing for that meeting. Try and get some intention going around how that meeting is going to come together. So that could be in, you know, the tactical stuff around who's going to be remote, who's going to be in person, but it can also be around the activities and what you do to support different cognitive styles. So do you have solo time for people who are deep thinkers and need quiet space to kind of understand their thoughts on a topic? Do you have a convergent time where people can come together and socialize and talk about what they want to do? So that supports, you know, more of a social style. And how are you synthesizing all that together? So it takes intention. It takes work to create a meeting. And I think sometimes what you know, you see this preponderance of meetings in some organizations is because they're cheap and easy to add to a calendar. But the value isn't always there. And so I think the more time you put into kind of planning what it's going to be like, the better it gets. And I think the more skilled you get at planning the intention of a meeting, then the overhead of creating it becomes less, because folks understand, you know, the type, different types of meeting. Is this a check-in? Is this co-creative? And then they can kind of like come to the meeting with an understanding of how it's going to run.
When you say 5 hours prep for 5 people. Is that for like what kind of meeting is that for? Cause I'm just imagining like, that's like a 1 hour meeting. You're spending a lot of your, I mean, is that every, if you have a recurring meeting, is that every time or just like kind of one-off?
No, definitely not every time. I think, you know, a good rule of thumb is if you're coming together to synthesize information, to generate ideas, to formulate strategies, those are pretty high value encounters that should probably be treated with a little bit more intention than your week, your daily stand-up. Mm-hmm. Daily stand-ups already have kind of an intentional agenda around them. What are blockers? What are you working on? Things like that.
So meetings where you kind of are creating the structure and agenda because you don't have one yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if it's work that y'all are doing and that work isn't going to be done outside of the bounds of the meeting, all the more reason to put intention into that meeting. And it's just a general rule of thumb. But I think also it's, you know, maybe an extreme example to get the juices flowing about, well, what are we doing with this meeting and why are we spending 5 people's time, you know, 5 people hours in this one block of time, spending that money and company time to do that? What's the intention behind it? And what value are we getting? What return on investment are we getting? What value are we getting out of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess with people working remotely these days, the last few years, one thing I've really appreciated is just like, people have gotten a lot more creative in running meetings, right? It's less like, okay, 2 to 4, we have this meeting and like, we got to figure this stuff out. Like sometimes we'll do, our product manager will like be like, okay, we'll have half an hour of like kind of kicking off this brainstorm, right? And we'll kind of do a little bit together and then she'll be like, okay, you know, we'll meet again on Wednesday at, you know, this time. So like before then, make sure you schedule half an hour on your calendar to do, you know, to think about this, come up with some more ideas. And it, as you said, like for some people, you know, getting in a room and having 2 minutes to write down stickies and putting them on the wall, like that works. For other people, like the forced creativity and like doing it in a room, doing it right now, like doesn't really work as well. And so having some space to be like, oh, I'll do that in the next day or two when I'm feeling, you know, more creative or I have the space for that. I think, yeah, just kind of like blurring the lines of like what, like how meetings are structured has been, I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that sounds like a really good way to approach it. I think as a facilitator of meetings, one has to be careful about the bias of their own cognitive style and create space for other cognitive styles to exist. And sometimes that means like lengthening a meeting from the default 50 minutes or the default 25 minutes to 90 minutes or a couple hours to provide those spaces for different cognitive styles to play and come to an understanding of the work. It also tends to create more space just to think and breathe and not have this harried kind of approach to meetings that you just feel like you're constantly hustling and rushing.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe your cognitive style and then how have you kind of expanded to support other cognitive styles?
Well, you know, I'm a bit of a mutant because I can go up in front of a large group of people. I like to speak. I can be social in that, but there's also this other side to me that needs time in a very quiet space to think and reflect on things. But the way I've supported different cognitive styles is the more I know about the human being, the better I can tailor the venue or the type of meeting. So, you know, I know we're working in workplaces where we have introverts, we have extroverts, we have folks with, you know, ADHD, dyslexia, different, you know, neurotypes. And so presenting information and prompts in visual ways, in text-based ways, in ways that some folks can do homework before and read the prompt before they come into the space is important. So not a huge amount of homework, but just like a prompt for the meeting tomorrow. Here's something to think about. Mm-hmm. And then in the meeting context, like that time to be quiet and that time to come together and socialize so that the introverts and extroverts can come together and think together and talk together. And then whatever other intelligence I have about the humans that are attending the meeting helps me shape it. Whatever I can do to kind of offset my own bias and my own, you know, way of doing things if I was to do it solo is super helpful and goes into the mix. So it changes from encounter to encounter for me.
Yeah. it sounds like a lot of it's kind of just about the intention. And I've heard that meetings at Strava are probably quite similar to meetings at Range, where like they're pretty structured, right? Like check-in, agenda, check-out. I am often reminded when I talk to other people that like a lot of meetings are not like that at other companies. And I think for me, I've realized that one of the things that helps people feel comfortable with meetings is just having that predictability, right? Like going into a meeting, knowing like, okay, this is roughly what's going to happen. Because when meetings kind of start to go off the rails, I think that's when people start to feel anxious, because it's just like, well, who's going to bring it back? Like, is this what we're here for? Right? Like kind of that uncertainty of like not having a facilitator, right? Like that unpredictability, I think, brings up, at least for me, it makes me anxious. I don't know if it makes other people anxious, but I think that's a huge part of kind of the fatigue that comes with meetings. So I think the intentionality and structure is key.
Yeah, I think if people feel seen, and if you're taking feedback as you do these types of meetings and adjusting your style, I think that can help. It's not just about, I come up with a meeting and after 90 minutes, it's done and I never think about it before. There's a whole kind of lead into it in terms of prepping people. And then there's what happens afterwards to honor the time they had spent there, whether it's synthesizing what we talked about or having a to be continued in another meeting. You know, it's really showing that you're designing for the folks who are going to the meetings. And that to me is the essence of experience design. It doesn't matter if it's not a product. It's just people are coming into a space and experiencing something with you. So the more intentionality you can put around that, the better. It addresses their humanity and helps them feel supported and heard.
One tip I have also is, I think a lot of times, especially when there's meetings of like five or more people, sometimes people are afraid of taking up space. You ask a question and then it's just crickets. And I had this one experience where I did like an async retro for a project we had done. And then I wanted to have some in-person time. So we had this Google Doc where everyone had filled out, you know, what they thought had gone well and what could be better. But I wanted to have some in-person time to discuss in person, I guess, on Zoom. And I had added it to one of our recurring meetings to chat about it. And I think I asked an open-ended question and just no one responded. And it was just like, oh, like this is, you know, there's something going on here where people, you know, people don't want to be the one to like say something. And so instead, as the facilitator of the meeting, I set a 2-minute timer and I was like, okay, well, you know, why don't you just take some time to kind of review the Google Doc, and then we'll go around the room and just share anything that was surprising or, you know, insights that came from the retro. And it was really fascinating because we use the Range meeting tool has a spinner. And so you can kind of go around the virtual room, and everyone had like a lot of very interesting thoughts, but no one really had volunteered them when I had just said, hey, anyone have any thoughts about this? And so, yeah, I think oftentimes people think, oh, introverts, you know, how can I get introverts to talk at meetings? Oh, I'll just call on them. But that I think is creates more anxiety around going to meetings, but having some space and then giving people the predictability of like, okay, we're going to have 2 minutes and then we're going to go around the room and you'll have some space to share, that actually like just kind of like decreases the anxiety levels.
For sure. And I think it also raises the level of safety. And I think that's what we're talking about here. We're not just talking about better structured meetings or more inclusive meetings. We're talking about safe meetings. And what you're doing there is extremely conscientious. You were reading the room, you were taking in intelligence as you were getting it and processing that to create a more safe environment. And it sounds like the outcome was that it went from not feeling super safe, feeling safe. And it's perfectly okay for things to not always feel safe. I think like we have a lot of wiring up in our brains that are helping us, you know, be careful and look out for threats and stuff like that. But the more we can do to, you know, create that environment where it's safe to bring thoughts, opinions, hot takes, whatever it is really great. So I totally applaud that approach. And it's something I think about a lot too, like not getting too rigid with the structure of a meeting and being willing to show that you can sense and respond and change in the course of that time to make a better meeting.
Yeah, that's true. Even with the recurring meetings, with the kind of recurring agenda items, it's good to change things up. I think like the pandemic, I mean, at least for me, I feel like with the pandemic, just like every day almost feels the same. And so like any source of variety is very welcome as well.
Yeah, I hear that for sure.
So we've been talking a lot about meetings and kind of like inclusion around meetings. I guess as a design leader, you know, if we zoom out a little bit, what do you wish other designers would do more of just in terms of inclusion in general, whether that's product or teams?
Yeah, you know, I think the way we behave and communicate in the forums in which we operate within a company as designers is a good space to practice inclusion. And, you know, I think the bigger picture to that is the more that we can practice it locally in safe spaces and build that practice within our, you know, within our design practice, then my thought is that that is going to start to work its way into the product. That once we start thinking about who comes to our meetings and what that experience is like, and the more that we can practice that, then it seems like a natural step to start thinking, well, we're researching, you know, this customer base, who's in that? What are their neurotypes? What demographics are they from? What parts of the world are they from? And what would best suit them in the product that we're building? That's my hope. There's an old, like, I think, product management theory called Conway's Law that just says, like, the way a company communicates manifests itself in their product offering. And, you know, I think the more you can be inclusive as in your internal communications and interactions, then I think, you know, maybe there's proof of that theory that it'll reach the product level as well.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's hard to imagine a group of people creating a really inclusive product if they're not they're not using those, you know, they're not thinking about how their meetings and how they work can be more inclusive to the people that they work with every day, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's plenty of examples of that. You know, we've all seen the stories of like Silicon Valley juggernauts that started off in a dorm room with a bunch of guys, and some of them are engineers and some of them are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we see, you know, kind of a limited scope to the inclusion of those products in those companies. Over time, they change and try to become more cognizant of those things, ideally. But yeah, I think the more limited in scope you are, and it, you know, like as a designer, we're not just facilitating meetings, we're facilitating the conversation around design decisions. And we can influence that. And we can say, hey, you know, I'm not really representative of the group of folks that are going to use this product. So let's bring in people to interview, let's bring in customers to talk to that better represent that and have them in the decision-making loop.
Right. And hire people who aren't like me, who aren't, you know, geographically co-located, et cetera.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, a little bit of how I think of that is just what aspects of me and how I show up in the workplace am I replacing in the folks that I'm hiring? Are they from a different, you know, a racial group? Are they from a different part of the world? Are they in a different time zone? Those types of things, in addition to what they're adding skill set wise to the organization. Yeah. It's not for me to create a clone of myself like that. That would be a non-goal.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much, Andy. It's been really awesome to hear all your thoughts about both inclusive meetings and then especially this, you know, last part of our conversation about, you know, zooming out and thinking about inclusion as an industry.
Thanks so much, Jean. This was really great. It's great talking to you.
Thanks for listening to Lead Time Chats. I'd love to hear your thoughts or feedback on the episode, so feel free to email me at jean@range.co. And if you're interested in trying out Range with your team, we'd love to offer you 2 months free. Just go to range.co and use promo code LeadTimeChats. Thanks again, and see you next time.